And we are back. I wanted to start today talking about being on set last weekend and how it went. Last week we talked
Oh,
about
okay. Yeah,
me going
feel
on
free.
set, and I was concerned. I expressed my concerns that not having a producer on set is something that isn't the greatest idea in the world. I mean, there are directors who produce their own stuff, but I always push directors whenever I work with a filmmaker, whether it's on a short film or feature or commercial or whatever it is, that they always have a producer on set. Because I think if you have no one else on set, you don't have a DP, you don't have a sound guy, all you have is a director and some actors. If you can only get one other person, you get a producer because that's such an important position. And we saw that last weekend. And it's not that it was a bad shoot. We had some really incredible and talented filmmakers on set. Actually, our DP is sort of a big name, like works with proper directors and has worked with like big name people, which was really cool to work with. I mean, I've worked with a lot of filmmakers before, but I think that's perhaps like the biggest name filmmaker I ever worked with before. So working with someone like that is really exciting, especially because as the DP, even though he's far more experienced than perhaps anyone on set, and certainly perhaps the most talented person on set and clearly knows what he's doing, one of the most skilled, he still, whenever the director asked him to do something or the director said, "Hey, we need to do this, we need to do that," he was kind, he was courteous, and he always listened to it. And he'd throw out suggestions. He'd be like, "You know, maybe we could do this, maybe we could do that." But it was always first and foremost for the strength of the director, and he always listened to the director. And I think that's part of the reason why he's been so successful in film. I mean, apart from his ability to just run a camera and understand the science and logic of running a camera, but just how willing he was, even though he wasn't getting paid, even though he's working on set with quote unquote amateurs. I mean, he's really the only professional, quote unquote, filmmaker on set. He's still so willing to sort of listen and adhere to the guidelines and ideas. And so it was really incredible to work with him. But without a producer, what happened? His first day on set. So it was a 2-day shoot, Saturday and Sunday. It's only 8 pages. So it's a short film. It all takes place at one location. You only have about three actors. Only two actors have lines, and one of the actors' lines only had like three lines. So most of the film is basically just this long monologue, this like 6-page monologue. That's most of the film. So shouldn't hypothetically be that hard to shoot. Shouldn't take that much time. So we had it for 2 days, and one of the shoots was a night shoot. Now, night shoots, they're always sort of their own thing. I mean, we've done night shoots before. They're very tough, they're very challenging. There's a lot of problems involved with shooting at night, especially at the location we were at. We were way up in Verdi in sort of like this abandoned house. Incredible location, just really great location scouting. I mean, it was now part of a land trust, so it's the government owns it, but it's like this really cool abandoned house. And it just looks magnificent. I mean, it just looks disgusting. And the film's about this sort of murderer and how he became a murderer and serial killer and all this stuff. And it's a great premise. And so we had our first shoot at 11 a.m., which already, in my opinion, as someone who's produced films before and worked on a lot of films, if you're shooting outside, that is way too late to start because sunrise here is about 6:30. Now, I know it's hard to get people up at 6:30 in the morning. I know it's hard to ask people to get up at 6:30 in the morning. And maybe it's too much to ask. But the fact is, if we don't even get onto set, not shooting, right? If we're not on set until 11, which is exactly what happened, we don't start shooting till 1 o'clock, which means instead of working with about 12 hours of daylight, now we have about 5 hours of daylight. So not nearly enough time to do all the things that we need to do. And just half a day wasted, right? We could have been doing setup while the sun was rising, and then we'd have all day to shoot. We'd have that sun all day, and then we could do the night shoot, and then we'd be done. We'd be good, right? Everything would be great. But we don't get on set until 11, and then what he has scheduled for some reason for the first day is only this one shot, a single shot. That's all he has scheduled for the first day, and it's only about a page. Now, I'm not the producer, so I don't make these decisions. So I I'm just there. I say okay, and it wasn't a problem with the actors either because one actor could only be there on Sunday. So, I understand that she couldn't be there on Saturday, but she wasn't needed for all the other stuff.
Yeah.
And so hypothetically we could have shot a lot more stuff, but we only shoot this one shot. We're done at like 2:30 and we're shooting again that night. So instead of shooting other stuff, getting B-roll, shooting perhaps the big monologue scene that would take hours to shoot, instead of doing any of that, we go on this 5-hour break because we gotta wait for the sun to set. So I go get dinner. Me and Brandon go get dinner with Emily and Chuck and Shelly. We hang out for a bit. We come back to set because he wants us back on set at 5:30. I'm like, I don't know why you want us on set at 5:30 when the sun's not gonna set for another 2 hours.
Yeah.
But we're back on set and we just stand around, right? We fuck around, which is fun. I mean, I love, fucking around on set. It's a good time. It's fun. And I want to express that I really respect this filmmaker. I love being on his sets. I love working with him. He's very creative. He's a great director. This is just, and I did have a good time, even though I'm expressing a lot of frustration. I did legitimately enjoy all this, but we fuck around for 2 hours. The sun finally sets. So it's finally dark enough. It's like 7:30 o'clock at night. We set up, we shoot it. Really cool scene. So the scene we shot, I guess spoilers for anyone who's going to go see this film in a couple of months. We're actually planning to submit it to Coeur d'Alene, which is the big local film festival. It's up in Tahoe. It's finally the shorts can now be part of the Oscars. Like they've finally been long enough that it can do that. So pretty cool. I actually think it has a good shot. I know a lot of people that work at Coeur d'Alene. It does help that those people are friends and that sort of thing, because that's how film festivals work at the end of the day. Not to spoil anyone's illusions about film festivals, but it if you know people, it helps. It really does. And so in the night shoot, he fucks a grave. I mean that's what he does. He has sex with the grave. And what's funny is when I read the script, it was a week after Saltburn came out. And so I was like, have you seen Saltburn? He's like, no, what is that? He
That's funny.
legitimately never seen them. He just had the same idea, which is
Yeah.
wild. And he's so pissed now because everyone who
That's
reads
too
the
bad.
script or seen is like, oh, it's like Saltburn. He's like, no, he just had the same idea. And it's different. I mean, it's definitely tells a different purpose. And honestly, it's not nearly as evil as Saltburn is, as we've
I don't want to
discussed.
ever talk about the movie
Or
again.
we don't have to talk about it before. It was perhaps our most controversial YouTube video that we've ever done is the
Cool.
software and stuff. People are just very angry. And anyways, we shoot that scene. Our actor's incredible. It's freezing outside. He's completely naked. And he has to hump a grave. I mean, it's a wide shot of him humping a grave. So like you gotta hump a grave. Like that's what you gotta do. And he was a real trooper about it. And everyone's really respectful, kind, courteous. He does a really great job. It's freezing outside. He's got like this giant coat on between sets because he's absolutely naked and it's like 40 degrees outside. I mean, it's not yet summer yet. And when the sun goes down in the desert, it gets real cold real fast. But that goes great. We wrap by maybe 9:30, right? Great shoot. Sunday comes around. And we have basically 6 pages to shoot in one day. We've shot more before. More can be shot in a day. But again, we didn't get on set until 11. And we didn't start shooting till 1:30. And what's most frustrating about that, and Brandon complained a lot about this because Brandon's been on a lot of my sets. I've actually worked with Brandon on more sets than anyone else, which is crazy because
Right.
Brandon's not like a movie person. He doesn't watch movies. He doesn't really have a whole lot of interest in movies, yet he loves being on set, which I'm really happy about. And I always am glad to have him on set. But to be honest, for like 2 hours, we sat around and I kept going, Steven, what do you want me to do? Like, how can I help? I mean, the whole reason that you have a crew is so like we can do shit, right? If you are ever on a set, if you're ever working on a set, everyone should always be doing something. There never should be people standing around ever. It's just a waste of everyone's time involved, especially when you're on a tight schedule like this, when you want to shoot a whole film in 2 days. So we sit around for like 2.5 hours because he's not giving us anything to do and we can't help him. He doesn't want us, right? We can't set up the next scene. We don't know what's going on. He doesn't have a producer, right? We can talk to these things. And the problem is, without that producer, everyone has to come to Steven, right? Any question that anyone has, whether they are an actor, whether they're the DP, sound guy, gaffing, whatever it is, they all have to go to Steven. The whole point of a producer is sort of, right, you go to the producer first. And then they can send the people, right, that they can answer most of the questions. And then what questions can't be answered, go to Steven. So that way he can focus on the things as our director that he needs to focus on and we can get through the stuff. But because it doesn't happen, right, he spends all of his time doing the stuff that's not really, right, it's not a valuable use of his time, which means it's not about it. Because if his time's being wasted, then everyone's time is being wasted, right? And it's not like these people are coming in with stupid questions, right? They legitimately have important questions to ask him. It's just, if there was a producer on set, they could answer those questions. And that's one of the big jobs of the producer, right? They're there to answer questions. They're there to make sure everyone stays on track, that kind of stuff. And I produced his last film, and that was like my big thing. That's the reason that we, you know, the last film, the film that I produce in our company is one of the production companies on it. It was a 40-minute film. So almost feature, right? It's kind of like in that weird gray area. And we shot that whole thing in a couple of days. Like we shot a whole film. And basically we were on set like 4 days, maybe 5 days. And that's because we, like, you know, we hunkered down. We spent months in pre-production. And with this piece, we didn't do any pre-production. I mean, he came in like with a handwritten shot list that the DP hadn't seen. I hadn't seen, right? I had only seen the script. Like I only saw the script a week before we shot. There was no sort of like, the schedule didn't really say what scenes we were shooting when. And because I had produced the last film and, you know, the film crew in Reno is small, if that surprises you. So I knew all these people. And so they came to me asking me these questions. I'm like, I don't know. Like, I don't have the answer. I wish I did. Right. I wish that we had spent the last 3 months in pre-production. As I keep telling him, like, you know, a film is made in pre-production. I know everyone's his thing. Right. He loves being on set and set's great. I love being on set, too. Well, actually, honestly, I could probably skip the onset part. I mean, I like directing, but the onset's part's so stressful. I'm a huge fan of pre-production. That's kind of where I shine because you have the time. And it's like, you know, in pre-production, it's like writing. You have unlimited time. You have unlimited resources. Utilize that, right? Utilize that to get a great schedule, understand exactly what's going on at every single moment, know where you're going to put the camera. Because this is the other thing, too. He's a big Werner Herzog fan, which I love Werner Herzog. Great filmmaker. We talk about him all the time. But the thing is, the way Werner Herzog makes films is very specific, right? He doesn't capture masters. He doesn't get coverage. And I respect that. I mean, when I make a film, you know, we don't get coverage either because I don't think coverage is important. And I think if you know what you want, then you should have coverage in the first place. But the thing is that Werner Herzog has the time and the budget, right, to be able to just walk on set and be like, okay, we're going to put a camera here, right? And we're going to put a camera there. When you have millions of dollars and all the time in the world, you can do that. When you got 2 days, you can't walk on a set not knowing where your camera's going to be. And that was part of the problem, is we walked on set on Sunday. He didn't know where he wanted to put he had like a general idea, but we didn't have anything marked. We didn't have anything ready, right? The actors didn't know they're blocking. It's like, all of this stuff should have been done beforehand. There's no reason we should be doing this stuff on set. The only reason you should be on set is when you're actually shooting. Like everything that isn't shooting, waste of time. You should already know how you're going to gaff it. You should know where your camera's going to be. You should know, your actors should know their lines. They should know, and their actors did a great job, right? They knew their lines. They did a great job. They should know their blocking. The only thing you should be doing when you're on set is actually shooting, because anything else is a waste of everyone's time and it's a waste of money. So we don't start shooting until 1:30. And it's a really tough shot. It's a great shot. And I think he did a great job. And it's really cool. And what it is it's the shot inside of this abandoned house, which we stood inside of and I was not comfortable with because it's literally falling down, right? It's rotting. Its bones are rotting. And it's like this old mill. Again, incredible location, but perhaps not the safest place in the world. And so it's this long pan where they have this conversation and you see like through cracks, you see them talking to each other. Really cool shot, but a really complicated shot, really hard shot, because you have to have someone pulling focus, who I was pulling focus, and then you have to have your camera operator making sure that he's on track with them. You have to make sure that all of our actors are exactly where they need to be on exactly specific lines, right? There's just a lot of things going on
yeah.
in this scene. We have to make sure everything's lit, right? Because we have to light both the outside and the inside. So, and like figuring out like, how do you match that? And all this different stuff going on. And so not surprisingly, the shot takes like 2 hours to do because it's a really hard shot. And it's just tough, right? And we have to do a lot of takes. And I think it deserved all those takes. I think we did the right thing. I don't feel like that shot was rushed. But this is the thing about all of Steven's set, and it baffles me why he does this, is he insists on always shooting in order. I mean, we never shoot out of order. We always shoot in order of how the screenplay is written, which is weird and not typically how it's done, but that's how he does it, and it's what it is. But the problem is that we always, 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 always go way over time on our first shot, and then we spend the rest of the day playing catch up. So then everything else is rushed.
Mm-hmm.
So we go to our second shot, which is, again, because of our DP, really beautifully framed, great shot. And it goes well. We only have to do a couple of takes because Steven's one of those people who, honestly, he doesn't even do safeties. He'll do like two takes, be like, yep, we got it, which is incredible. I do love that. And I respect it. It's not something I can do, but something he does.
Yeah.
And we get the second shot, and then our fucking sound guy, who is he's a good person, but he can be frustrating to work with. And apparently all sound guys are like this. He insists that we get this extra footage because he's like, well, we're going to have to ADR this because my boom can't get close enough to them, even though they're also lapped up. And Steven's like, well, their backs are to the camera half the time. Why does it matter? And like the part where he's actually talking to the camera, the boom is close enough. So it's like he wants to get them close for the stuff that they're not even facing the camera. Why wouldn't you use ADR? What's the logic here? But this man thinks like ADR is like the most evil thing to have ever existed for some weird reason. So we waste a bunch of time getting shots that we don't, like, I know we're not going to use. Steven even tells me, he's like, I'm not going to use these shots. I'm like, I know you're not going to use them. So why are we doing them? Why are we wasting the time that we don't have, right? The sun's, you know, it's going to start setting soon. Why are we wasting our time doing the shit? But we do it anyways. Get a couple of covered shots, and then we go to our location, which is a grave. The same grave that was fucked yesterday. And we get the first shot. It goes well. He gets what he wants. And, you know, we're looking at our watches. It's like 6:30. And we're like, Steven, you have four pages to shoot, a four-page monologue, arguably the climax of this film, right? The biggest moment of this film, where he's burying the woman they murdered, and he goes this long monologue about why he did it and all this shit. And you only have like 30 minutes to shoot it, which happens every time on his set. Like, the most important scene is always put at the very end for some illogical reason. And thank God, they talked him out of shooting that scene that day. Like, Steven, you know, I'm very grateful for the people on set who also talked him out of it. Because I was on the same side. I was like, Steven, if you shoot this, your most important scene, half of the film, is going to be shot in 30 minutes. It's going to be rushed. It's not going to look good. You're not going to get what you want. So, extremely long story, long. They're going back on set today to finish the shoot because they couldn't get it. Because they wasted a lot of time doing stuff that they didn't need to do, and he didn't have a producer on set. So I was going to be on set today, but Monday is Emily's birthday. So this is Emily's birthday weekend. So I couldn't make it on set, but I'm sure it'll go well. We're actually working on what is it called when like you make a short for a feature film? There's like a word for it. It's like the...
I couldn't tell you. I don't know.
Can't remember what it's called, but it's like the...
Like an anthology?
No, it's like the concept. It's like...
Oh, okay. No, I see what you mean.
You know what I mean? Like they make it like... It's like...
It's like a demo. Kind of
thing. Yeah, it's like a demo. So we're actually... I've read his demo. Well, I read the original feature length script, which I've been telling to write a feature for a long time because honestly, features are just a lot easier to sell than shorts. So I always encourage filmmakers to make features. And so he wrote this feature script. It's actually pretty good. I read it, gave him a bunch of notes. And now we're going to make a demo. And so we're actually meeting with the production company to create the demo pretty soon. One of the production companies is going to help support. So I'm pretty excited. You know, like I said, he is a really good filmmaker to work with. He's very creative. He's really weird and twisted in like the ideas, and his storytelling is always very intriguing. I really hope if we shoot a feature, which I think is in the works, and I'm not saying it should be me. I'm not saying I'm a good producer. I don't think I'm necessarily a good producer, but he needs one. He needs a producer. Because it for a short film, right, when it's 8 pages, you can sort of get away with it. I mean, kind of. Obviously, there was a lot of problems. But like, if you're going to shoot a feature, like you have to. You just need a producer on set.
Yeah.
So I'm really going to, like, that's going to be one of my stipulations. I'm going to be like, you have to have, because like in my short films, you know, it's not that big of a deal. But you got to have one for a feature. Like, you just can't, you can't do that. Because that's like, you know, 2 or 3 weeks worth of shooting. Like, you just... Yeah, I have a producer. So I know I went on a super long tangent. So I'm gonna let you, I'm gonna let you talk about stuff.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah, moral of the story is, you know, hire a producer.
Yeah. Did you want to talk about Roadhouse? I saw that you just watched it.
Well, no, look, okay, look. I saw Dune. Let's talk about Dune briefly.
Let's do Dune.
Because you and I saw that movie.
Yes.
I don't like have like a lot to say about it except that like it was pretty good. Saw it on IMAX, drove to Lexington to go see it, watched it, and it was good. I don't really have anything like all that like, you know, like substantial to say about it. Mm-hmm. I love the Giedi Prime stuff.
Yeah.
That part of the movie was fantastic. It was hilarious. I like when the Harkonnen actors and performances are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's suitably exciting. Looks good. Sounds good. you know, that's pretty much it. You know, I don't really like have anything. Again, I don't have anything substantial to say except that, you know, if you haven't seen it, go see it. See it in a nice big theater. I just, you know, it's good. It's cool. Yeah, you know.
I saw that you also watched the documentary.
Yeah, did you have you seen that before? I was going to bring that up too.
No, I wanted to talk about it though, because well, we've okay, talked about it before.
Okay, yeah. Your favorite director, Alejandro Jodorowsky. yeah, I've known about the documentary for a while. It's like 10 years old now, and they put it on Max, so I had to watch it. And it's a great documentary. It's well made. It's nothing like over the top presentation wise, but it's good. This would have been like the coolest movie ever. It would have been like the perfect Dune movie, in my opinion. And it's sort of just kind of like all about like, and Jodorowsky, you know, he's obviously interviewed a lot for the movie.
Right.
And he is just, you know, one of the craziest people in the world. Like he is so insane. He gives amazing sound bites. He tells amazing stories that are very like unbelievable, which they, you know, he's probably exaggerating sometimes. The movie was going to have like music from Pink Floyd and Magma. It was going to have the Harkonnen planet and designs were going to be made by H.R. Giger. This is pre-Alien.
Wow.
It was going to, the Emperor was going to be played by Salvador Dali. And he told this extremely bizarre story where like Salvador Dali was just kind of like a weird guy. And so he kept trying to like, he was making Jodorowsky like travel to different cities around Europe to try to prove that he would be to try to get Dali to like work on the movie. It's like a really bizarre thing. I don't know. very, very, very like mid 20th century shit, you know?
Yeah.
They were going to use like, there's this amazing science fiction artist I've never heard before called Mobius. He was going to do a lot of like, he did like all the drawings for the, he did these very detailed, very particular shots. He drew like basically every single shot, every frame essentially of the movie on this amazing science fiction artist. And
So, I mean, the whole movie, even though the movie was never made, the whole movie you could...
It exists.
It exists, sort of, right? Like, you can imagine what it may look like. I'm trying to think who else was going to be in it or who else was going to happen. They got this, like, great, like British science fiction painter to, like, paint, like, all, like, the spaceships and stuff, which looked crazy. They got, oh, you know what? They got Dan O'Bannon, would end up writing Alien. He also directed a movie that we covered on the show, Return of the Living Dead.
Oh,
we
covered
that show. He directed that movie. They were going to get him to do the special effects.
Wow.
So it was just going to be like, it's just kind of like, it was going to be this unbelievable, amazing, captivating pre-Star Wars science fiction movie. And they get like Nicholas Winding Refn to talk about it, and Refn is just kind of like, yeah, who knows, like, what if that movie was made and came out, it would have completely changed everything. Because yeah, I mean, like, pre-Star Wars, you know, Star Wars hasn't come out yet and Star Wars changed everything, right?
Yeah.
It was completely earth-shattering thing, and movies have never been the same, right? And you know, Jodorowsky, they have all these people on board. And the one thing they need to do is they need to go to Hollywood and they need $5 million, and no one wants the movie and they give up. And that's pretty much it. Like,
wow.
They like, no one wants to pick up the movie because Jodorowsky is literally too weird. Like, he's too crazy.
Yeah.
And he's just like not, I think producers at the time were, they weren't confident in him, even though at this point he's made El Topo. This is post Holy Mountain. He's made El Topo. He's made The Holy Mountain, which are successful, critically acclaimed movies. Like, he's very well established.
And yeah,
he still couldn't get it off the ground. Now, it's very disappointing. Of course, from that movie, you get Alien. Right. And with Alien, you get Blade Runner.
Mm-hmm.
And you get all, you know, basically like every, like, of course, Star Wars, you know. You know, you get the entire history of science fiction film that we know very well. You know, The Matrix, I guess you could put it in there too, is probably, you know, without Alien and all these other, and Star Wars and stuff, you probably don't have The Matrix, you know. So pretty much every major science fiction movie made, you know, more or less after like the mid-1970s, you could say, is probably a reverberation from Dune not happening. But it would have been a crazy movie.
I would have loved to see that movie.
He completely changes the book, too. He completely changes the story.
Really?
At the end of the Dune movie, Paul is supposed to die. He's supposed to get killed. But what happens is that because he's a martyr, his spirit lives on as a messiah. And so, like, they all, like, the characters of the movie speak in Paul's voice. And they're like, I am Paul. And so they all come together. And it's supposed to be like this, like thing where, like, through their power and, you know, their belief, the planet comes back, and the planet, like, becomes like a spaceship that flies through this space.
Sure.
He also describes, like, how the beginning of the movie is supposed to, like, be this really long shot where you're out in space and you get closer and closer and closer to Arrakis, and as you're approaching Arrakis and getting closer to it, you know, people and things and spaceships and things are flying by and stuff. It would have been the coolest movie of all time. It would have been like it would have been my favorite movie ever made. You know, it's because and you know, it is what it is. You know, it was probably just not meant to be. And, you know, of course, with those relationships that were formed, you get Alien, one of the greatest science fiction movies ever. And honestly, a lot of the stuff that they were talking about that they wanted to do in the movie didn't sound super practical at the time in terms of the technology that they had on hand. You know, Star Wars, the original Star Wars, that movie obviously had like a ton of production problems and stuff, mm-hmm. but it's still a very practical movie ultimately.
Yeah.
Like, he used a lot of, like, obviously very, at the time, very high tech special effects. Mm-hmm. But it's still a very practical movie. The Dune movie didn't sound very practical. It sounded really, it's like, how the fuck would you have done that at the time?
Yeah.
But you never know. They could have pulled it off. So I do recommend the documentary again. It's not like, like there's some really crazy stuff that people say in the movie and stuff. And again, you know, it's a cool story too, you know, like, you know, a story about a movie that was never made, like, oh, you know, well, what if that movie was made? What would it be like? What would it sound like? So yeah, I think that's essential if you loved all the Dune movies and things like that. Oh, he tells another funny story where he goes to see the David Lynch Dune. It comes out mm-hmm. and he's just like, you know, I found out David Lynch made the movie, and I was just like, oh, of course, like, oh, this, he, if anyone can do it like me, he could do it, you know, that'd yeah. be great. And so he's like kind of putting off watching it, because like, he's just like, I don't want to see someone else like achieve what I try to achieve. And then he goes there with a son or something like that. And they're like, and he's sitting there, and I was just like, I'm like, but I'm sitting and I'm watching it, and I realize it's a failure. It sucks. Like, I'm happy. I'm so happy, you know, because he's not, because he, you know, I guess like had David Lynch realized that vision, I guess he would have been jealous about that, right? Like, but because it sucked, it's like, oh, I don't have anything. I don't feel jealous at all. So, yeah, it would have been something, man. I think also, like, I guess the movie was supposed to be really long.
Sure.
And you know, producers were like, can it be 90 minutes? You know, and they're like,
like what happened to the Lynch one, right? It was originally a 4-hour
exactly,
cut.
Yeah.
So I guess even if it did exist, right, it might have been cut to pieces, or, you know, who knows?
I mean, you know, still, Hollywood producers, dumb. Then and now, they have no vision. They have no, and you know, they go off, people in the movie go off about that stuff. And yeah. Yeah, I like that documentary. It was good. Cool.
Yeah. So you watched it. I'm not big into documentaries. I don't watch very many documentaries, but it's something.
It's suitable.
Yeah.
It gets a job done, I think.
Yeah. And that's, I'm more interested just like in the story of that self, because it is such a specific thing and something that we've talked about before. So, because the whole just Dune universe, I guess, just like all of the failed, like Denis Villeneuve was the only one to not make a failed Dune movie.
Well, you know, I'll say, you know, like the Dune Lynch, I wouldn't necessarily say it's an abject failure. Mm. It is kind of a failure. Mm. I'm more forgiving than for that movie than other people, but that's just me.
Right. No,
you know, but that's just me. But I don't know, like, I think, you know, you see the designs of the spaceships and the costumes and everything. It would have, like the Jodorowsky movie would have been so colorful and crazy. You know, the Denis Villeneuve movies, they're great, again. But, you know, they're not very colorful. Maybe kinda they look bland. A little bland,
yeah.
You know, maybe they look a little like, you know, you're kind of like looking at different shades of like orange and brown and white. Besides the Harkonnen part of the movie, that part is just like, whoa, what the fuck.
That's awesome.
When you go on Getty Prime.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, it's just kind of like, I would have loved something just like way more like psyched out, seven, you know, to real, like just kind of literally Jodorowsky says, and he really believes this, at the beginning of the movie, he said he wanted to create a movie that would give the viewer the feeling of being on LSD without them actually taking it.
Yeah, that sounds
like
about right.
he wanted to like make them feel as if they were on LSD and change their minds and change the world. Like, he really, like, that was really like his goal with the movie, was to like, and like, and when he talks to people to be in the movie, he's saying that to them like, this is important. Like, you need to be on this. He calls, when he talks about the people that he recruits for the movie, he calls them his warriors. He doesn't call them crew members or anything. He calls them his warriors, because it's just like that important to him.
Mm-hmm.
So again, that's why it's just, again, just more reasons as to why it's disappointing that it didn't work out.
Yeah. I know I'm in the minority here, but I think I like Dune Part 1 better than Part 2.
I don't really have a preference. I think they're both equally fine.
Yeah. But I agree with you. Especially Dune Part 2. It's just, it is magnificent. It is a feat. Not to say anything that it isn't, but Kind of like I was saying last week, it's just kind of bland. I mean, there's just so much. I talk about the idea of like snow blindness, right? The oranges and there's just it's just so empty and big and
It's just not weird enough too. It just I wish it was a little bit more weird.
It's
If it was like
weirdly
maybe
safe.
5-10% more weird, you know, I think it would be even I would love it even more. It is kind of funny to like think like because when we went, I mean, packed theater, and this is like the last weekend it's playing in IMAX and it's packed, of course. It's just kind of funny like imagining like people who like never read the books, don't care about science fiction all that much, but you know, it's a new big movie. It's got like, you know, it's got big actors in it. It is kind of funny like imagining people going to see this movie and just being like, even if they've seen the first part and they know what they're getting into. I don't know, like it's still it is kind of funny to imagine people watching the movie and just being like, what the fuck? Like I don't get it. 'Cause it's like this is like pre-Star Wars science fiction, right? Like this is like pre-Star well, you know, I don't know. I think the book probably came out when Star Trek was on air. So it's like pre-Star Wars science fiction. So it's kind of like in a completely different idiom than what people are used to. And so the movies, you know, obviously like tone down a lot of stuff, which is my problem, but it still kind of has like the same like characters and the language and you know, and the same ending, you know, like all this stuff. Like, so it is kind of funny. Like I still had a good time like imagining people like, and you could kind of feel that with people walking out of the theater, just kind of like, okay, you know. So I'm cool with that. I'm glad that it exists.
Yeah, me too. I'm very glad. Actually, Eric, to Brandon's boyfriend, went and saw Dune Part 2 again in IMAX, like a
Good. Yeah, I
week
mean,
after we saw it.
that's fine. I mean, I think it's good.
Yeah. I don't know if I could have that
Oh, well.
experience of that particular movie that soon after. But, you
I'm
know,
good. Yeah, I got my fill.
I got my own like weirdness, right? I had this thing about not watching movies more than once. So that's also part of my own just like thing of like if I'm gonna go to a movie theater, I'm not gonna pay $20 to see a movie I've already seen. I'm gonna see something new.
No.
Like I'm gonna see go have an experience I haven't had before. Or I'm gonna go, you know, see a movie, you know, when they do like those old school, like they'll show Casablanca or something like that, or
Sure,
you know, that kind of shit. Like I'm not gonna go see a movie I saw a week ago in theaters again. Even if I love the movie, which I like doing, I just don't know if there's a movie I don't know if a movie exists where I would go see it 2 weekends in a row in a movie theater.
No, I there are I just I haven't done it. There was a
A
movie
new
I
movie.
saw recently in theaters where I really wanted to go see it again. I think it was I think when I went and saw I disagree with you. I think movies are good enough where I'm just kind of like, oh fuck, I need to watch that again. There was one movie I saw recently where I'm just like, yeah, I'd love to go see that in theaters again. That was so fucking good. But it's not coming to I can't I kind of wanted to go see Ferrari a second time in theaters, I
Yeah.
think. I was curious about seeing that movie again. But I just didn't end up going to see it, just you know, scheduling and stuff like that. I just had I didn't want to go out of the way to go see that. But that's an example. I don't know, it depends. Dune 2 for me is not that movie just because like it's long and I got the idea. I don't need to go see it again. I'm good. Some movies I would love to see again in theaters. Even if I were to see it, you know, 2 weekends in a row or even 2 days in a row, why not? If I can get more out of it, that's great.
Sure.
But you know, that's not every movie. That's a rare,
Right.
occurrence.
Yeah. There was a movie that I really wanted to see that just came out. I can't remember what it was called or even what it was about.
Movies lately just have not been looking good. Like I don't even want to talk about them.
Gosh, now it's gonna be like, what was the okay? Let me,
Ghostbusters.
yeah, it was the new Gustavs. That was it. No,
God, when we saw Dune, I swear, like I was so depressed looking while looking at all the
the
trailers.
trailers.
Even though there's not like a major Marvel movie coming out, like I don't think there is one coming out soon. You know, I didn't see. I don't think that it was like a movie that appeared in the trailers. It still everything still looks so depressing and shitty. you know, that Ghostbusters movie looks like shit. Like, everything just looks really... The only thing that looked kind of interesting, obviously, and it's still, like, a sequel, right? Like, it's still, like, part of a cinematic universe, right? Like, it's not... Is the new Mad Max Furiosa movie. Absolutely. I'm obviously going to see that.
Yeah, of course.
I'm very interested in seeing that. But again, it's not an original movie. It's still, like, part of, like... And, you know, the Godzilla King Kong thing. That movie looks good, too. That it looks cool. You know, I like it. Again, it's part. It's still connected to like other movies. You know, it's not an original like thing. So, I don't know. It's just like even the ones that looked interesting, I still couldn't shake the fact that you know it's adaptations and you know sequels and stuff.
Yeah,
whatever. But whatever.
I did want to see the American Society of Magical Negroes. I did want to see that, but they only show at 10:45 a.m. at one theater, so. Looks like I'm not going to be saying it.
Yep. Nope.
Because how would I? Gosh darn it.
Well, look. Again, like I said, I'm just lately, I just kind of like slip into just like wanting to watch movies at home because there's so many movies that I haven't gotten around to. You know what I mean? Like, You could go to a theater and watch like a half-baked movie, or you could stay home and watch like two or three amazing movies that you've never seen in that span of time.
Right. Yeah. It's
so
it's going to that movie theater.
Like again, have you? Okay. I'm gonna slip into my next thing I want to talk about. This is the only other like movie related thing I wanted to talk about. Well, I don't really have any other movie unrelated things to talk about, so this is it. Have you ever seen the movie Roadhouse? Like, have you ever seen the first movie, 1989's Roadhouse?
We've talked about it, but I'd never
seen it. I think I brought it up when I watched it.
Yes, you did.
I mean, you gotta watch this movie, man. Like, so I decided to rewatch it last night because they have a remake of it on Prime.
Right.
Directed by Doug Liman. Who, you know, sucks. He's a shitty director. He fucking sucks. Are you looking him up?
Yeah. I
bring up this guy every time and you always look him up.
Every time. Yeah. Edge of Tomorrow.
And you're like, oh, yeah. Yeah, you always like, you're like, oh, Edge of Tomorrow, Edge of Tomorrow. Look, Edge of Tomorrow is a good movie.
I like that movie.
It's not like that good, though. Like, it's just okay.
It's fine. It's, like, fun. It's good. It's a fun movie.
Yeah, like, it gets a job done, I guess.
Yeah.
But you know, he made the first Bourne movie, which sucks. I wouldn't say it sucks, it's just okay. It's okay. And he directed the terrible movie Jumper.
God, that movie's
an awful.
It's
bad movie. And he also made one of the worst pandemic era movies ever, Lockdown, which is terrible. It was so bad that it premiered on Max and then they took it off. Like, it's you can't watch it on that anymore. It's like a Max exclusive movie that came out like in 2021. And then like a few years later, they just like took it off because no one gave a fuck.
Wow.
So it's off of there.
That's anyway. Gotta be bad.
So and people were weighing in on this new Roadhouse remake that he did.
Yeah.
And people were saying it was bad. And of course I was like, I wanted to watch it. I was too curious to see it. I knew it was gonna be bad, but I was too curious. No, and it also is an excuse to rewatch the original Roadhouse.
Yeah.
Which honestly, after rewatching it, I think I even like it a little bit more.
Okay.
It's a great neo-Western 80s film with arguably one of the greatest movie characters of all time, played by Patrick Swayze, played beautifully by Patrick Swayze. That character is so great. He's vivid. He's clear, concise. It's such a well-established, well-written, well-performed character. If there's any reason to watch it, it's just to see Patrick Swayze like do his thing and perform that amazing character. He's so good. He's so like romantic, stoic, powerful. You're rooting for him from beginning to end. You love him so much. He's so good. He's so convincing. And you know, it's a 1989 movie. It looks great. Yeah. It's lit amazingly. Has great music. The ancillary characters are great. You know, incredible writing, crazy lines, just a movie that's completely of its time. Just so good. I love Roadhouse. I think everyone should watch it. It's just, it's so much fun and it's so entertaining. I still think it runs a little long, but I don't feel that way as much anymore. So yeah, the fact that you haven't watched it is, you know, it's good. You got to see it. It's just like,
how'd you find it?
It's on Prime, and the remake is also on Prime. It's a Prime exclusive.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, like, if you don't have Prime, it's on Max, I think, as well. So yeah, this remake, Jake Gyllenhaal is the character now. The character's name is, I want to get the character name because I think the character's name is the same between both movies. It's a great name. James Dalton.
Great name.
James Dalton. Great movie name. Actually, in the remake, it's Elwood Dalton. So, okay. So in the original movie, Patrick Swayze, he is a cooler, right? I don't know if you know what the central idea of the original movie is.
Not really.
So the central idea of the movie is that Patrick Swayze is a cooler. So he is basically like a lead bouncer.
Okay.
And so he's like a bouncer at this like bar, and he's really good at it. Right? Like, it's one of those movies where it's very satisfying because you're watching a guy do a really good job at this thing that he does.
Mm-hmm.
A very specific thing that you never really thought about before. And this guy comes in, he's like, hey, I own this bar. It's a dump. I need you to come. I'll pay you a lot of money to come and help me fix it up by kicking out people, helping me fire people that are stealing from me, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he's like, Dalton's like, okay, I'll go. Whatever. I'll be there when I get, you know, he's cool. He doesn't care. You know, like, he's so cool. And he gets there and it's almost like, it's like watching an episode of Bar Rescue. It's this really satisfying thing where he comes in and he turns the bar around. He fires people super satisfyingly. He kind of has like this philosophy and rule book that he teaches to all the people there. And so it's like super cool to see him kind of like impart these like things to them. But he has this backstory, which is he got involved with this woman who was married and the guy got angry at him. He didn't know she was married, and the husband was going to shoot him, and he killed him by ripping out his throat, which he does later in the movie, in case you were wondering. He rips out a guy's throat. And so he's kind of like, he's just super fucked up about the fact that he killed this guy that he feels didn't deserve to die, even though he did it in self-defense. And so it's just kind of like this, he's just like a very great, vivid character who has this like great, it's just like a very well-written kind of like established character that feels so fleshed out. This is the problem of the remake. The opposite is the case with the Jake Gyllenhaal Dalton character. It is the most boring composite ever. So the background of the Jake Gyllenhaal character, and Jake, he's like, I don't know what's going on. Like, it's just not.
Is he trying working. His best?
He's not trying at all.
He's not trying at all. He just
no, he sucks. You know, Jake, sucks. You know, Gyllenhaal, he's been some Jake. Good movies. He's been some bad movies. I wouldn't say I love him because he's starting to slip for me.
Mm.
He's been some bad movies, been some good movies. Obviously, we know he can do a good job.
Yeah.
And in this movie, he's just like, it just feels like he's just like,
phoning it in.
I don't know, Jason, he's just like phoning it in. Yeah, even though he shouldn't be. And the background of this character in the Roadhouse remake is that Jake Gyllenhaal is a disgraced UFC fighter who killed a guy while in the octagon, and he feels bad about it. He's not a cooler.
Yeah. So he's just a fighter.
Just a guy. Yeah, he's a fighter.
Oh.
Which is so much more boring.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
I agree.
And he gets recruited to do the same thing, except it's at like a tiki bar in
Florida.
The Glass Key, Florida. Yep.
Yep.
Which, you know, beautiful looking location.
Yeah.
It's just not the same though. I like kind of like the dusty sort of almost like pseudo Western kind of environment in the original movie. Another thing too about this remake, very unfunny, very bad dialogue. It's shitty. And yeah, again, it just kind of comes down to that central character. And Jake phones it in. He's terrible. And it's just, he doesn't have the same thing where Patrick Swayze comes in and he's just like, boom, boom, boom. You know, he has like this philosophy, this like this, he's this thing that you really believes in. Jake Gyllenhaal is just kind of there and he beats up people. That's it. He doesn't have like any great speeches or lines.
Are the
or
fight scenes
wisdom.
Good at least?
No, they're really, really bad. They look like video game cutscenes.
That sucks. That's awful.
Like, no, I'm like, it. There is like Hong Kong film level fighting choreography in the original.
Yeah.
Like, it's like something like, it's like inspired by that stuff.
Wow. Yeah.
The fighting in this movie is very uninspired. And the way that like Lehman like whips the camera around mm-hmm. is disorienting and terrible. So it's like really, really bad.
Yeah.
The one maybe saving grace of the movie, and it doesn't save it, is the acting debut of one fighter, Conor McGregor. He's in the movie.
In this movie. How is he?
He's in it. He's actually suitably threatening. He's a threatening force.
Okay.
Right? Because I think in real life he is. He's a very threatening guy.
Yeah.
So in the movie, he actually does a good job at coming across as like very scary. But that's pretty much it. That's pretty much the only good thing I'll say about the movie is that like he's all right in it.
That's
everybody
crazy.
Sucks
Conor
in it.
McGregor is the saving grace of this movie.
He's kind of funny and like kind of crazy, and Jake Gyllenhaal just doesn't exude this any like energy or he's just kind of like mugging it the whole movie too, where he kind of does like smile throughout the whole movie, and I don't know, it's just not the same. Like, it's compared to the Patrick Swayze performance and character, it's not even in the same universe of quality. Right. It's completely just on the down. It's terrible. So yeah, I would not recommend seeing the remake. I watched it out of curiosity, but you know, other than that, I would not recommend it. I would recommend the original movie because it's an amazing film. It really is fantastic. It's entertaining. It's funny. It's crazy. It's on another cocaine 1980s film level. And yeah, so that's pretty much all I have to say about the Roadhouse cinematic universe.
Wow. Well, Emily is telling me that it's time for me to wrap up the show. So,
well, that's pretty much all I want to talk about anyway. So.
But I'm glad we got through the Roadhouse stuff because that's amazing. I really want to know about that. And I was vainly interested in this new Roadhouse movie because
no.
So I'm glad you took the dive on this one because I feel like lately I've been taking the dives on a lot of bad movies. So it's about time that Andrew
I'd be taking
picks up the slack.
Yeah. Again, just watch the original and
mm-hmm. All right, y'all. Thank you for listening, and until next time.
Thank you.
Oh wait, shit.
It's birthday weekend.
Okay.